past week, it was definitively the stage that I finished seven, and I managed to go in the break at the end of the race to be there in the front with the best rider and have a chance to win the stage was really nice for me. It was the first time I was able to ride a move like this and be that strong in the front of the race. So I really, really enjoyed that, and I'm really happy with that day.
Welcome to the Canadian Cycling Magazine podcast. I'm Matthew Piaro, editor of the magazine and your host. You just heard from Hugo Uhl of Astana Pro Team speaking about one of his high points at this year's Tour de France. It's been a busy September. The Tour recently wrapped up, Tirreno Adriatico before that, and the World Championships are a few days away. We'll hear from Uhl with his look back at the Tour and look ahead to Worlds. Michael Woods will provide insights into the race of two seas and the upcoming championships. Throughout the tour, I checked in with Uhl. It was his second time at the French Grand Tour. He seemed to play a bigger, stronger role for his team Astana this year. We'll hear him talk about echelons, spreadsheets, and crashes. Michael Woods won a stage at Tirreno Adriatico and held the leader's jersey for 2 days. Both riders are slated to represent Canada at the Road World Championships on Sunday. They'll tell us what we might see on the circuit in Imola, Italy, and of their hopes on how the road race might play out for them. First, let's hear from Uhl. He and I spoke on the tour's first rest day, which, of course, featured COVID-19 testing. We're speaking on the first rest day of the Tour de France. Part of the rest day plans are COVID-19 tests for all teams and their staff. Have you received your test?
Yeah, I did the test this morning. It's really quick. We have to go at a specific time slot every team, so we don't see each other. And there's, I think, 8 or 9 stations. You get the test done, and they did all our team in about 10 minutes, and we were out. We could go on the ride and just easy now have the afternoon to rest.
You had a false positive in mid-August that prevented you from racing in Lombardia. Do you have confidence in the testing and the policies here at the Tour?
Yeah, I think the ISO organization is aware of this. They can have some mistakes. So if you don't have any symptoms, they will, and you get a positive test, they will do another test and some more investigation before taking any decision. That is an update on the protocol, I think. And we have to do some testing, and nothing can be perfect. But at the end of the day, we have to test, and I totally agree with this.
This is your second tour. It's quite different from your first. So much has changed in a year, more than a year. But how would you compare racing in France in late summer instead of in early summer, which is the regular time for the Tour de France?
Well, I mean, it's better for me. I'm not a big fan of the big heat. I would say it's different because, okay, this year is the COVID also, so there's less spectator. The atmosphere is different. Normally it's in July where everyone is in vacancy, happy and doing a party. So the tour is like a big party all over France to see the race, and it's part of the culture. So we feel a little bit less this year because the protocol we need to respect, and it's totally fair. But out of the weather, so far it's quite good, but we could have more rainy day and cold in the mountain, but so far it's good. We'll see with the big mountain stage when we go higher.
You finished 15th on stage one. How was that final kilometer for you?
Well, I was pretty lucky. I went on the good side of the road. I went in the wheel of the Jumbo Visma with Grenadier just to stay safe. Honestly, I didn't have in mind to do the sprint. And then when that big crash happened at, I think, a little bit inside 3K to go, then we were only 40, 50 guys in a bunch. So I said, oh, now I'm lucky. I can do the sprint. But it was still quite a lot of chaos because it was not so much organized. So there was people moving from the left and the right and the left. And then, I just tried to stay careful because I know my fitness was good, and I didn't want to end up in a stupid crash trying to sprint because I'm not a real sprinter. So I have get in the front on a few stages. There was a sprint, but there was always crash that I could escape. And after, I just followed the wheel, and I ended up, I was in the front. But I had a bit of luck there, and just managed to be in the good wheel at a good moment and finish it up in front.
On stage six, your teammate Alexei Lutsenko won. What was your role in the success?
Well, I mean, it was pretty easy for us. Alexei went in the breakaway after 6 or 7K. And at the beginning, I was just there to keep an eye on it. It was him and Gorka need to get in the break. There was, I think, 5 or 6 guys in the front at that moment. And Alexei just attacked on top of a false flat. He was in the break. And behind, we just take it easy. And my job was to take care of Lopez to place it well at the bottom of the climb. But on that day, I have to say that Alexei make his victory by himself, and we didn't have to contribute so much to it. It's all him with a really strong leg and amazing ride on that day to get a solo victory. It was great for the team. So since then, we have a good momentum, and everyone is happy. So it's always good to win a stage early.
How did the team celebrate that evening?
Well, we came to the hotel really late, so it was a bit of a rush. We got a little glass of champagne around 9:45 after some guy had to go to massage because they didn't have time before we eat. So it was a long transfer after the stage and about 2 hours and a half. So we came late, so there was nothing really special, but we need to stay focused on recovery always, but just a glass of champagne all together and enjoy that moment a little bit. And then everyone went back to their room to make a recovery.
So only a small moment, only a small glass of champagne, nothing to take away from your preparation and your focus.
Yeah, exactly.
The next day, stage 7, from Melo to Laval, you did a lot of work in the final 30 kilometers or so after the group split again. Tell me more about that strategy. Why was it important for you and your team to be so active in that final 30 kilometers?
I mean, when a national event like this, there's never a place for everyone. So as we have almost all the team in the front, 7 riders out of 8, it was all in our favor to push the pace and try to make some gap. And at the end of the day, we gained some time on the GC contender like Landa, Pogacar, as we were in a good position in the front. So we just decided to go help Grenati at the time, and we pushed the pace up, and Jumbo-Visma also helped the chase. So basically asked me to ride as hard as I can until the finish line to keep the gap and put pressure on the other team. Yeah, that's what I was there for, and I'm really happy I could be in that first echelon and be a good actor of that stage and ride in the front. It was a really nice moment. Most of the time, sometimes we get screwed in the national, but for that time, it was me in the front, so that was good.
You still had the energy to finish 11th on that stage. How are you able to do that?
Well, I mean, I was in the front, and the rider, they respect me because I was riding, so I could hold a good position by the end, and it was not easy to move up, and I was in the good wheel, so I just keep following and try to do a small sprint at the end. I mean, I was tired, but I still have a little bit more left, so just give it a go.
So far on the tour, you finished in the top 20 on 4 stages, including that 11th on stage 7. How is it different in the finish among, say, the riders in places 10 to 20 compared with the sprinters who are going for the win?
Well, I mean, from 10 to 20, nobody cared about it, so it means nothing for us. And you have to think that most of the team, when they have a really good sprinter, you do your work and you just pull over and you stop. So in the case of Astana, we don't have any sprinter, so we just stay in the wheel and follow. We don't have so much work to do. We just take care of Lopez. So that's why, we end up in the top 20 because we have no specific roles or something. So it's easier to get some results.
So for you, whether you finish 11th, 15th, I don't know, 20, doesn't really matter so much for you in those places?
No, not really. You have to be really close to the front to consider it. It depends on which day. When it's a really big climbing day, then if you finish 10th on the Tour de France on the mountain stage, then you weren't the front with the best, it means something, but the sprint, it's different.
On stage 8, what was it like going up the Col de Périssaud? How did you feel about the fans on that climb? Were they too close?
Some of them were really close and they don't wear the mask. We cannot control everything, but ISO is doing a really good job to make sure that minimize that kind of stuff to happen. But of course, you cannot control everyone everywhere. But they're doing a really good job. And as a rider, we just have the plan to wear the mask and keep a good distance between us so we can be safe and keep racing until the end to Paris.
My next chat with Uhl was on the second rest day. He seemed pretty chill. As the tour had gone on, the riders had settled into the rhythm of the long race. Uhl noticed less fighting for position within the bunch. The racing, though, was still on. Uhl looked back on a big Stage 12. He was in a selective breakaway that had some pretty big names in it at times, such as Julian Alaphilippe and Pierre Roland. Uhl finished 7th on the stage, and that week's bummer was a crash. How has your rest day been?
The rest day have been really good. Enjoy it a lot. We started this morning with a PCR test again, and then a small ride, 45K, 1 hour and a half. There's some activation, sprint, and work just to keep the engine going a little bit. Tomorrow we have a hard stage, so I want to stay, keep the body awake. And after that, just come back to the hotel, had a nap, good massage, osteo, and I'm almost ready to go heat again.
How does it feel within the tour when outside around France there are cases of COVID-19 and they're going up and up?
In my case, I don't look at this at all. I feel pretty safe in the bubble. I have not any contact with anyone outside of the race. So I feel safer here in the race than at home because I don't have to go to groceries. I don't have to go anywhere. So everyone around me is doing tests. So yeah, I'm really happy we can race and be in a safe environment with the big work of ISO. Tour de France organization is doing a good job. And I think the Chu and Chase, this coronavirus case going up, the strength measure for the weekend. As you can see, there was no spectator in the climb. There's less and less people on the start area, finish area. We're completely alone. Yeah, it feels totally safe, and it didn't feel the difference at all.
How does the second week of the tour compare with the first week of racing?
I would say that the second week start to be a little bit more relaxed. Not by the speed of the racing or the race was really hard, even harder than the first week. I think we went much faster. A lot of things were really hard with the fight against the Bora for the sprint, and they pushed a lot of stage. But I would say the last few days, there's less fighting in the bunch for the position. Everyone started to be more tired. It's more a little bit more easy to ride in the bunch, and everyone starts to be tired and they don't fight as much as the first week for the position, and it's just going to get even better on the third week.
What was the best part for you of the past week of racing?
The past week, it was definitively the stage that I finished seven, and I managed to go in the break at the end of the race to be there in the front with the best rider and have a chance to win the stage. Was really nice for me. It was the first time I was able to ride a move like this and be that strong in the front of the race. So I really, really enjoyed that. And I'm really happy with that day.
And what was the most frustrating part of the past week?
I would say crashing because one guy dropped a bottle on the road while I was taking some feed. So I lost my handlebar and I just crashed. It's never good to crash. So that was the moment when I was kind of pissed. I'd say I could have avoided it. And but at the end, there were no major consequences. But it's never nice for the body to go down and get some scratches. And you need 1 or 2 days to recover a little bit. So that was the moment I was a bit shocked.
That was on stage 14, and I think it was Oliver Nason who maybe made a mistake in the feed zone. Have you forgiven Oliver Nason for that?
Yeah, I know him well. I know he didn't want to make anything bad. So what happened, happened. It can also happen that I do the same mistake. So there's no big deal. It's part of the race. He apologized to me. I know him quite well, and we're still friends. So it's no matter.
Tell me what it's like being the only Canadian on Team Astana. Are you a bit of the diplomat?
What you mean by a diplomat? To make everyone be happy together? Or?
Maybe that, or maybe just connecting people. You're also a bit of a road captain. So what's it like being in that kind of leadership role?
Yeah, here it's a bit different. Normally we have more nationality, but here it's a strong Spanish team. So, yeah, I mean, I try to keep the guy together and make the good call at the right moment so we can stay in the front. Yeah, make a good race for Miguel, that he showed that he's there to win the race, or at least try to win, then be in the podium in Paris. So he deserves a good team around him. And so my job is to just to keep everyone on the same line and working well together so we can help Miguel at the best and make sure we have good communication and everyone is riding well together as a team.
A lot of work that you do is off the bike. You study maps, you look at the race book, and you're also looking at spreadsheets every day for your own personal health and nutrition. How much work do you do with the books and the computer each day?
Oh, it's hard to tell. I would say I use at least 30, 35 minutes to do the road check. Yeah, for the nutrition part, I've done a lot already, like before the tour. On the rest day, I took maybe 1 hour and I fill all the stage, all the information I need to make my calculation. So after, it's only maybe 5 or 10 minutes a day. I just put the data up to date, then my power and what I eat, I update. But it goes quite fast, so maybe 45 minutes. I want to keep it simple to have as less as possible to do, because the day goes pretty quick and sometimes we come late and all things like this. So I don't want to waste too much time on this, just to be relaxed and enjoy the day.
Do you tape stage notes to your handlebars or anything like that?
Yeah, we have every day from the team director some information, but it's basically what is on the book, like the top of the climb, the feed zone, all those type of information. But normally when I see important thing on my recon of the course, then on the VeloViewer application, then I kind of also keep my personal note. But so far I just keep in my mind, like it's pretty easy. It's probably 2-3 key points, 2-3 kilometer I need to remember, so I keep it in my mind. But sometimes I used to do my own bar tape, but here in the tour we have the director doing it for us. But it's sometimes better when you do it so you remember well.
And what are your hopes for yourself in this final week of the tour?
I would like to get in a breakaway again and to see tomorrow how it goes, or the other day. If I can see an opportunity, try to get it. Yeah, and then out of this is going to be to help Miguel at the best so he can finish on the podium of the Tour de France. That's going to be it. But so far, I already did a good Tour de France, so I'm going to this third week pretty relaxed. I already made a lot of good things, so I'm not too stressed. My tour is already a success, so if I can add a little bit to that, then fine. If not, focus on Miguel and make sure he can jump on the podium in Paris.
Miguel Angel Lopez, the team leader who Uhl was working for, did make it into third place overall after winning the 17th stage. But Lopez's performance on the final time trial took him down to 6th. I spoke with Uhl after the tour was over. For the Canadian, it had gone pretty well. He was tired, and he had to rest for the World Championships a week after the Grand Tour ended. So where are you right now?
I am leaving service goods from Astana Pro Team that is in Karas behind me.
The tour ended 2 days ago. How do you feel right now?
I feel quite good. Of course, I'm a little bit tired, but so far it's quite good. Yesterday I was tired from the traveling coming home, but today I feel better. Yeah, no, I feel good.
What kind of rides have you done in the past few days?
Yesterday I did nothing, and today 1 hour and a half, easy, just in the legs. And then tomorrow I'm going to do a better workout.
On the last day of the tour, you wore a mask, and on the front of the mask it was written, "No to racism." Who wrote that?
Every rider was free to do it. It's something we discuss in the CPA group that hold the rider. I want to put the support for this cause that is hot topic now in the world, and just it was a small way to express, you know, that we support that. And then cycling, especially in Astana Pro Team, we have a lot of nationality, and no matter from where you are, whatever the color you are, we are all on the same page with the same ride. And again, it was up to each team to participate or not, and every rider could do it or not, and I choose to do it, and I'm the person who writes this on my mask by myself.
How would you compare your first tour with your second that just wrapped up?
I was a little bit stronger, I think, this year. I could do a little bit more work, better in positioning in the bunch, but okay. It was more or less the same. I think I finished in better shape now. Last year, I was quite sick at the end, coughing a lot. It wasn't the limit, but I came last year to the Tour de France with a lot more fatigue in the body than I was this year. I think it was the right thing to do because the Tour was really hard this year again.
Would you do anything differently if you were to race the Tour again? Would you do anything differently for your next Tour de France?
Absolutely not. I think I know how to get ready, and I start to know quite well my body. I've done a few Grand Tours so far, and especially for the last 2 years was the Tour de France, so pretty confident. I know what I need to do before and also in the race to be sure that I can perform at a good level. The last two editions that I was racing, I was feeling quite good, and I think the plan works well, so I won't change too much for the next coming year.
How do you think all the kilometers in your legs will affect your rides at the time trial and the road race at the World Championships?
I took the decision that I will not race the time trial because it's too close, and I want to stay home for 1 week now and rest. So I won't race in the time trial. I think I'm going to be in really good shape in road race because if I recover well, then after a Grand Tour, you have a big benefit from it. You get a lot of power and more endurance. Usually after a Grand Tour, I'm really efficient 1 or 2 weeks after. If you rest well and I just do a little bit of training to keep the fitness high. So I expect that everything will go well this weekend, and I can be there for Michael Woods, and that we can make a great result for Canada.
How does a circuit race like the one in Imola, Italy, differ from a more point-to-point course? Are the strategies and tactics different?
Yes and no. At the end, I would say no, because, okay, it's a race. There's always a point where, you know, it's where it's going to happen. But when it's a circuit race, like, it's going to be in Imola. Everyone know perfectly the course, know exactly where it's going to be the hill. After 10 laps, then you know exactly how it works, you know. So there's no surprise on the course, you know. You're going to be behind and get a surprise or whatever. You know where you're going. Typically, the team would race the same way than if it's not a circuit. In the case of Imola, sometimes the circuit race, you need to be more attentive because there's more turn and it. But Imola, I think it's not so bad from what I remember in the Giro when I raced. But for example, if you race a race like Quebec or Montreal, it's more hard because you need to fight for position all day and be focused all the time to make sure you hold a good position, and this way you can save a lot of energy. But Imola, I don't think it's super, super technical for position. But when it's straight for 100K, it's way easier than a circuit race where you need to position yourself and always be aware of the turn coming up. So it's even harder circuit race. But it depends, you know. You have a race point to point with a lot of small road climb turns, then it's the same thing.
What are your hopes for the World Championships?
Well, I hope I can be there really close to the end with my good Woods and play my role to perfection, to place him in the best position to get a medal and even be the world champion. He showed in Finland over the years ago that he was in really good shape. So hopefully I can be at the best and make a really big race for him and have an impact on the result at the end.
Well, thank you, Hugo. Good luck at Worlds. And yeah, we'll be cheering.
Thanks.
The other Canuck who had a big stage race in September was Michael Woods. He had great results at Tirreno Adriatico. I spoke with him after the race. He was at his place in Andorra. It was evening for Woods. You'll hear birds chirping and a church bell ringing in the background. Woods spoke about what Tirreno Adriatico revealed to him as a rider and why a circuit, instead of a point-to-point race, will be a boon to him at the World Championships. Michael Woods, at the start of Tirreno Adriatico, what was your cold, honest assessment of what you could accomplish in that race?
Well, before the start of the stage, I did an interview and I said my big goal was to try and get a podium at the race in the overall or a stage win. And I felt like prior to this race, I had done really well in terms of my preparation. However, I just was missing race days. At Milan San Remo, Strade Bianche, I had some bad luck. And then finally at Lombardia, I was good, but I just was missing that race exposure, that race experience. And it meant I came apart. So my confidence was a bit shaken after Lombardia, but I still knew I was fit and I still knew I had a good shot at getting a result in Tirreno.
On stage three of Tirreno, what did your attack tell you about your rivals? So this is the attack at the bottom of the climb.
I knew after recon, after looking over the stage and even riding that stage, because we did the climb twice. So we did it as a circuit and we did it one time prior to going up the final time. I knew it was super steep. And when grades are that steep, and I can stand, I have a lot of confidence. I told myself after doing the first time up the Muro with 1K to go, I wouldn't think of anybody else. I'd just go to the front and go as hard as I could all the way to the top. Regardless of what my competition was doing, I just wouldn't think about what they were doing. After about 600-700 meters, I started to see gaps open up behind my wheel, but I still didn't look back. I just looked forward. Even after I got over the top of the climb, I never looked back. I just kept on pushing, knowing that if somebody was able to stick with me, we would still have a gap and we'd need to keep momentum going. But yeah, I was able to distance everybody, actually.
You came into the final kilometer with Rafael Majka of Bora Hansgrohe. Who had done more work in the break at that point, just as you saw that you had 1 kilometer to go?
I think it was relatively even. Maybe Majka was pushing a bit more. I was confident in my sprint, and so I knew that I probably had a better kick than Majka, and even Majka admitted that to me in the move. So I knew he was more interested in focusing on his GC aspirations, and personally, I with there being a time trial in this race, I knew that I likely wasn't going to win the thing, so I was more focused on winning the stage. And yeah, I was able to lean on that a bit more, but I'd say it was probably 60-40.
Behind you, your teammate, Tanel Kangert, was in the group. What was his role at that point?
Well, at that point, Tanel was also riding a GC race as well, and he managed to hang on and make that second group. And I was fortunate to have him in that second group because he just kind of helped disrupt the pace of the peloton. When he was coming to the front, obviously he wasn't pulling or pulling super slow. And that resulted in a bit more disruption, a bit of delay, and ultimately every second counts when you're trying to keep a gap. That certainly impacted the gap that we had.
On stage four, it was up to you and your team to defend the leader's jersey. What was that like?
Special. I actually really focused on enjoying that moment, cherishing that moment. It was my first leader's jersey at a World Tour race, and such a cool race to start thinking even that I might have a shot at carrying it to the end. Yeah, it was just nice. And the team rode so well. We were so strong that day. I was strong. Came over the last real climb of the day, just with Yates and Garen Thomas, and was, I felt like I could answer any of their moves and was able to outsprint them at the finish. We had a bit more of a select group. I think I had the shot at winning the stage, but just overwhelmed by Mitchelton's numbers on that stage. So it was a nice day, and to even take the King of the Mountain jersey as well on that day was cool.
Near the end of that stage, Lucas Hamilton of Mitchelton Scott and Fausto Masnada of Deceuninck Quickstep were ahead of your group, and they had a gap similar to what you had the day before, about 15 seconds. What calculations were you making at that point in the race?
Well, for me, I knew I had significant time on both guys, and I wasn't concerned about them on the climbs moving forward. If I was going to have the form that I had the day previous, on the day following, I wasn't worried about those guys. And so I was fine with letting them go and focusing on just trying to get the last bit of bonus seconds and not letting guys like Garen Thomas, guys like Rafa Micah, guys like Simon Yates get away.
Stage 5. How did you think that final climb would go up to Sassotato?
Certainly a lot better than it did. I felt like going into that climb, I was really confident, really feeling like I was the strongest climber in the race. The team rode exceptionally well for me that day again. However, I wasn't. I had a bad day. Came apart halfway up the climb. I was actually a bit surprised by the legs that I had. I just wasn't the rider I was just the day previous.
Is there anything you could have done differently, do you think?
Maybe we could have ridden the climb just a bit less hard. But I even at the start of the climb felt pretty good. And knew that if I wanted to go after the overall, I had to put even more time into leaders. So I was pushing for it to be a hard pace. But some days you just don't have in the World Tour, and that was the day I just didn't have it.
What does your performance at this Tirreno Adriatico tell you about the rider you've become?
At the end of last season, I was really felt like I'd arrived at the World Tour in terms of a leadership role. I felt like the team could ask me to race most races, and I could lead and potentially win. And I was really understanding how I could win. But then at Paris-Nice, I just had a really bad injury, broke my femur. After having such a significant injury, everything gets thrown into question a bit. My fitness, I was able to get back, and I was even able to prove that fitness at the virtual tour and show that I was putting out good numbers. But a crash like that still shakes your confidence and your peloton skills. So the Tirreno win was on stage 3, it was more just a success in the sense that I was able to come back and get back to where I feel like where I was at the end of last season, and just give me that confidence that I can be at the top of the game in the World Tour.
How do you hope your fitness or your abilities develop into the rest of this compressed season?
Yeah, it's such a tricky season, such an interesting season. But I think the stars are really aligning for the World Championships. I don't think I'm the favorite. Just watching guys like Wout van Aert and Alaphilippe at the Tour, they're certainly quite strong, particularly Wout van Aert. I think he's the hands-down favorite. But I do think that the way I performed on Stage 3, of course, that will be quite similar to Imola. I have a lot of confidence and I think I can do something, a good result there.
Let's talk a bit more about the World Championships. This year's course is a circuit, and you're pretty familiar with a circuit race, having raced in Quebec and Montreal 4 times. What does a circuit race, or what can that tell you about how the World Championship road race might play out in Imola?
Yeah, I think that people are talking about how difficult this race is going to be, and it is going to be difficult, but it's not going to be as difficult, I think, as a lot of people are prognosticating. I think you look at the original course that was planned in Aigle, and I think that was a much more challenging course, more of a climber-oriented course. This is going to be more oriented towards a guy that can get over really difficult climbs, but can also sprint from a very, very select group, which was why I'm thinking guys like Wout van Aert will be good. But the other thing that I'm looking forward to is, as you mentioned, it being a circuit race. I think anytime there are circuits, I do better than just classic point-to-point stages of races, because I'm not from Europe. I'm from Canada. I don't know the roads as well as a lot of guys who have raced in Europe since they were kids. I don't know how the roads are going to play out as well. I haven't raced on every single road in France or Spain or Italy like some of these guys have. Anytime we go from point to point to transition to more of a circuit race, I tend to flourish. I tend to do a lot better because all of a sudden the playing field's leveled a bit. I don't have to know every bump in the road prior to the stage because I see it a couple times. And then I'm able to handle my bike better within the group. I'm able to position myself better. So for me, I get really excited anytime we get to do circuits.
That's an angle I hadn't considered before, but you're right. Some of those Euro pros have like every speed bump and roundabout memorized. But everybody gets to see the course a few times at a circuit race. So that is a bit of a leveler.
Exactly. And I find because I have to adapt in the non-circuit environment more than the guys that know the course, I have to ride the course in a point-to-point course differently than them. It even plays into my hands more once we hit circuits because those skills that I had to learn doing blind, all of a sudden the blindfold's taken off and I'm employing these tactics that save a lot of energy while also knowing the circuit. And I always love that feeling.
Michael, thank you for your insights into the World Championships and good luck at those races. And good luck with the rest of the season.
Awesome. Thanks, Matthew.
And that's the episode. It's written and edited by me, Matthew Piaro. I had help from web editors Terry McCall and Lily Hansen-Gillis. The podcast is produced by Adam Killick. He composed the music, too. Thanks to Ontario Creates for its support. And thank you for listening. Please rate and review the show, ride safely, and I'll talk to you later.